got the extended mix this morning.
I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines and the stories that make the Elm City and what we still hope is the free United States of America. I don't know, tick. Nothing ticks better than Pundit Friday, which we're about to begin here in the WNHH studio with the number one pundits in the media universe, like Babs Rawls-Ivy, the dairy-free goddess of our grassroots radio operation, last seen headed to Montreal for the first vegan ice cream shop that just opened.
I'll be in her suitcase.
She's also the managing editor of the Inner City News, the host of WNHH's Love Babs program, and just the nicest person to run into every day here at our...
Turn your mic up.
All right.
There you go.
All right. We also got the flyest news hunter-gatherer this side of Fleet Street, boss of the Budget Beat, the Beauty Beat, and the Star New Haven Independent reporter and shutterbug in the Omni Hotel, Marcisa Ricks.
I was a shutterbug in the Omni Hotel.
We have the queen of quippery and quintessence of compassion, La Voz Hispana publisher Norma Rodriguez-Reyes.
Hello.
The bravest man in New Haven more than ever this week. Trump fan and
WNHH
station
this
manager Harry Droz. Anybody
Your
else in the studio? It's kind of crowded in here. You guys see anybody else?
I don't think so.
I can't see past all the names. There's so many names. I can't see him.
You know who's here?
I hope he doesn't have that many personalities.
I heard. I got a preview that there was a new exciting name.
Well, you know who's here in the studio?
Who's here?
Mr. Top 2 Percenter.
Oh!
The exalted expostulator of extemporaneous exegesis.
You got to remember, he's never going to forget.
Bossa Nova, Muva, and Shaka. The griot of the grassy knoll. The conquistador of passing criminals. Keeper of the cure. The weaver of wellness and wisdom. Mellifluous and meritocratic minor of melody. The plow driver of peace.
I need you to get a t-shirt.
The driver out of demons, discord, and dissonance. The optimizer of opulence and opportunity. The undertaker of unfiltered utterance. The erudite earl of ergonomics. The liberated lion of lucidity. The maniacal monarch of mercy. The blistering barbecue of brain dead bozos. Our executioner of existential enemies. The alchemist of assonance and alliteration. The zealous zapper of xenophobia. Sagacious sergeant saltless swing quintessential quipper of quotable quackery. The grandee of grandiloquence of gastronomics. Our prize protector against pusillanimity. The distinguished duke of diplomacy and detente. The king of conspiracy. Concoction, the deacon of the dozens, the bodhisattva of battle rap, the missionary of modesty, mesmerizer of the masters, shaman of the shoreline, the potentate of 360 state, recognized ringleader of risque repartee, the eighth wonder of the world, wizard of wise guy waggery, capo of casual conversation, first name inflamed, daring don of dope deliberation, the soul of spit,
like you're gonna sing a Negro spiritual,
the West Indian whisperer of want, the emperor of explosive exposition, the esteemed elucidator the top tier talent from Trinidad and Tobago, the dap-toned deliverer of decency, the maximal media maestro, bodacious bold-faced barista of bop, chess master of chill, primo practitioner of pop prestidigitation, the beyond just somewhat honorable high priest of hip-hop, right reverend of rapture, reigning racketeer of rightitude, sanctified slayer of the slow-witted, the never late for supper, decorated, dazzling, and indefatigable dunker and dryer of the dinner dishes, maximum mixologist Joe Ugly of the Joe Ugly Show in the morning. Welcome, everybody.
Who's the new president now?
But my question, folks, okay, Joe has...
I want to be able to do that.
Joe has a lot of names, but did he get any sleep last night?
No.
Why didn't you get any sleep last night, Joe Ugly?
Oh, my God. I was up all night looking at the news. God.
Stuff going on. Oh, it wasn't because of any noise.
No.
There was no noise keeping you up last night.
No sirens?
No, I didn't hear no sirens last night.
Interesting. I wonder if it's because someone's been saying that we live in Siren City.
There
are efforts by officials to try to make it a little less noisy with all these crazy, super loud. Well, we had a story about this in the New Haven Independent this week, and I saw that I know that Joe Ugly, this is dear to his heart because he lives at the top tier. The top 2%er living up at 360 State. And what the story was about people like Joe Ugly.
Yeah.
Who live downtown, but also in the neighborhoods, but especially downtown,
right.
Where some people feel we have the loudest city in Connecticut. I'm not sure how they quite compare that.
Mm. No, it's not the loudest in Connecticut. I'm quite sure. It's probably the loudest in the United States.
And especially downtown where you have these canyons. Although you have canyons in big cities, too. Where you have these tall buildings, right? And then you have two hospitals, one of which is right near downtown where the ambulances come and go, and plus coming off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another reason we found out. So I was at City Hall where there was a meeting with one guy who lives at the Taft. And he's trying to get them to make it less a siren city. And all these city officials, fire chief, emergency management chief administrative officer, and the head of the regional head of the ambulance company, they said, we'll sit down with this one guy who's been so upset this for 10 years.
I'll sit down.
And we'll talk to him about what you're concerned and what we're trying to do. So here's what they said.
Can you guys hear me? Not really. Yeah.
You know what it is? Our headphone mic is off, but I think the listeners can hear because it's showing up on the board. But if you're not hearing it, please tell us on Facebook Live. So here's what they told us, folks. I was thinking of Joe Ugly the whole time.
Mm. I'm thinking of me.
I'm thinking of you because I know it's tough living up at the 92nd floor of 360 State Street.
Life is hard up there.
So here's what they said. On the one hand, our sirens are no louder than any other cities. That there are standards, there are national standards that you have to, by law, follow, that the fire company and the ambulance company follow. But there are some reasons it might be louder in New Haven.
Oh, I got to hear that.
One of which is that there, of all the five major cities in Connecticut, we're the only ones where all firefighters are trained as EMTs, emergency medical technicians. So they're all equipped to go be first responders on a scene of a medical call. We decided to do that in the late 70s, thought that would make people safer because the firefighters get there quickly and you can get save lives. So we often will have one or two or three vehicles where other cities will have one or two, the ambulance.
That sounds so good.
And that's one reason. Another reason is because of people like Joe Ugly living in these big towers, right?
Yeah.
So then you got these canyons where the sound kind of bounces off.
No, that's good experience.
So they said that even
it's your
though
fault,
this is
basically
true,
is what
and the business community, actually the business community, talking about top 2%, they've been complaining for a couple of years.
You want me to go to the videotape?
The business community for a couple of years has been pushing city to do something about it. And they said, well, we can't turn down the volume. We have contracted about having a firefighters be EMTs, but there are things we can do.
Uh-huh.
So among the things they've done is that they have certain lower priority emergency calls where it's at a doctor's office or a hospital office, like a medical outpatient place, where there are first responders already on the staff. So in those cases, they say we don't have to send the firefighters. So they had 1,000, because, you know, we have 40,000 emergency calls a year. And the third reason it's gotten louder is that the population is getting older. There's more calls. So they say we cut 1,000 last year by having people not go to all those. And there's still some more they can cut out. They have to look at some contractual stuff about the protocols of 911. They also said that they can, because it's a 6-7% increase every year in number of calls. They also said that they're about to hire a new ambulance unit. And when the fire, so we have two out of all our fire stations, there are two that have these ambulance vehicles that aren't like big fire engines, but you could do the same work on them without as much noise, all that. So they were going to go to four, but the fire union fought it because it had to do with swapping out an engine in the Ellsworth station. And they're going to have a third one. So they think, oh, the reason that'll make a difference is because they don't have to drive as far every time you're calling one of these two fire department paramedic units.
They're coming from wherever they are.
They'll be closer. They'll be one of the Gough Street station. But they also said that maybe they can look at having people wait to turn on the sirens in certain cases, in certain places, not as long of the trip with the siren on. So this impressed the head of the Town Green Special Service District, Wynn Davis, who's been pressing this issue. But it did not impress Ryan Knox, the University of Bridgeport law professor who lives at the Taft, who's been pressing this, had the meeting with them. He says, it's really kind you met with me. I'm glad you want to do something about it. I think in the last 2 years, he said, it's actually gotten louder. Mm-hmm. Not less loud. I've been here 10 years, it's louder. Joe Ugly's been there, what, 2 years?
One, actually.
One?
No.
Has it gotten louder or less so in that time? Like, you slept last night, if not for all the crazy news on cable TV.
Yeah, you know, probably it's because I had the... You know, the thing about it up there is if I close the window because it's well insulated, you don't even hear the neighbors. I mean, it's like, what? But here's the deal. I have you as a witness. You've been up there.
Uh-huh. I couldn't hear myself think.
Sorry, but, we haven't been up there. No. Yeah, neither have I.
Okay,
you guys owe us like a party or something.
Oh, you got it.
You guys don't understand. You got to be in the top 2% club.
Oh, here we go.
To get to the 96th floor.
I'm counting on knowing the top 2% to be in the club. Yeah, I might not get there.
Don't just let the white people up there.
Well, hey. I have neighbors.
Ouch.
But seriously, Joe, do you think it's getting quiet or not?
No, it don't get quiet.
It's definitely loud.
And here's the reason. What you just read or what you just said all sounds great, but you know what the real deal is? The problem is when I see on a Thursday night at the let out, like around 1:30.
With the bars.
The bar let out, which is right around the corner on
Crown Street. Center and Orange.
And Orange Street, that area down there. When you hear the whoop whoop just to go around the corner, that's a problem.
Right, that's different. That's police trying to do crowd control with all the green. Now, you did know you were moving near a bar district when you came downtown, right?
Didn't even anticipate it.
Really?
Because I thought I was so far up, I wasn't going to be bothered. You know,
it turns out the sound carries.
It went right on up. And the thing is, we don't really hear it once the windows are closed. It's muffled.
What are you going to do in the summer?
But that's the thing, you know. they messing up.
Well, it looks like we're keeping winter, so.
I think we're going to go right from winter to summer without spring. But just for the record, I've been on email chains where you folks weren't invited up to the 360 Tower for parties.
I'm sorry, no.
I saw Babs.
The one time
Babs.
That I was invited, it got canceled.
Yep. Same.
Well, maybe that. No.
No. I'm glad you highlighted that because same. I have. Was it canceled?
Yes.
Okay.
But what do you guys think about? What do you guys think about
Siren
City?
When you cancel something, what is it that you?
Rain check.
Yeah,
check.
You do a rain check.
Let me do a sound check. So Harry Trose, who is very station manager in Bravest Man, New Haven, he understands audio, right? He's our station manager. You commute from Waterbury. How's this? Well, you don't live in the center of Waterbury, though. I'm just wondering what you think about the noise there versus here.
Well, I don't hear anything unless the fireworks are going in the municipal stadium. So I don't hear any sirens.
It's like I got silence.
Yeah.
Because we were hearing from listeners who are also concerned in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, I was going to say that I don't hear, like I can hear when the Fountain Street guys go from the station there. Mm-hmm. I don't care where they're going. I feel like I can hear them. and I hear them from the time they leave their fire station, and they usually like go up Alden Avenue, I think, a lot. So at night they go.
That's a good imitation.
I never knew Marquise had a lot of practice. Our fire station's busy, so shout out to those guys.
So Fire Chief John Austin said it's actually people don't understand that even late at night you got to do it. That first of all, he said he'd never been anywhere.
Do you really?
I think it's loud in our neighborhood because it's so quiet in our neighborhood at night. So
he says
that's the
people
only
don't realize
hear.
That New Haven drivers. He's never seen anything like it. They just don't move.
They
out
don't
of the way.
Move.
And that's
I've
why
seen
like,
that.
So like Joe's hearing that with
the I have seen
let's
that.
Let's start giving out some tickets because my ears can't be getting
well, that's what I was wondering what Joe said about tickets. I wonder if part of this is enforcement. So like I remember James Lewis was temporarily our police chief in between police chiefs. He came from L.A. He said, I've been in L.A. There are no crazier drivers in the universe than New Haven. They just don't follow laws. They don't follow rules. They don't get out of the way. But Norma, you were about to say something.
Yeah. You know, if everyone complains about, imagine the people who live on Artisan Street. You know, the co-op there, and also on Olive Street.
Station. Yeah,
you know, and because the fire station is right there.
Mm-hmm. So they get
so,
it every
you know,
time.
We're complaining, but we don't live next
but
to
you see,
a
what
fire
you're doing is exactly,
station.
What you're doing is exactly what everyone tried to do to me when I first came down here because complaining. Oh, you live in the city now. Babs was part of the crew.
I'm still part of that.
You're in the city now. No, just because you're in the city don't mean that you have to...
You can't.
No. I stay in Manhattan a lot. And I'm telling you, it's not
that loud.
You know why it's not that loud? Because there's so much other loud noise around you.
So it kind of
buffers it out a little bit.
I feel like that's true because there's no place in New York City that's like louder than the music in the stores in New York.
Oh my God.
If you go in there when it's empty, you're like, what are y'all doing? They're trying to drown out all the other sounds so you can get this atmosphere. I think this is a good segue to another story, though, Paul.
What story is that, Mark?
Story about some neighbors who are... got into it today, a couple days ago at BZA.
And you're talking about the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Sound. It's a little bit about sound.
It
and
is
a little
about
bit about
sound.
Some other things.
And
maybe.
Where else would you hear that except on Pundit Friday at WNHH Radio, New Haven's home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org, where it's Pundit Friday with the best pundits in the universe. And Markeisha, so tell us about that, Markeisha.
So I don't know if you guys saw the story.
I saw the story because I live in that. I mean, I don't live in the building.
But
you work
in that building, so
my condolences.
There's a couple of developers who finally got approval to put a restaurant where it's been so many things. It was Jackie's.
Lord.
It was Deja Vu, Soko's. So they're gonna put a restaurant. It's not called a bar,
but it's gonna have
it's going to have. They're gonna serve alcohol, and they get to stay open till
1 a.m.
One in the morning. And
this is at 50 Fitch.
Okay. And that's the setback. It's the little strip setback near Whaley on Fitch, right on the West River, right by the beginning of West.
And so they got that approval, and they got the approval for the deck outside too, right? Because the deck was illegal.
Where are you putting a deck?
Oh, it's already there.
Oh, it's already there.
It's illegal deck.
But because they
it's already there.
They didn't build it illegally, so they get
it's
to
not
keep
their
it.
Fault.
It's
okay.
Now a fact on the ground.
What was it? Eating a parking lot.
So Westville's always saying, we want more restaurants. Mm-hmm. So
and
Westville
they were very receptive to other restaurants
so
in
with
Westville
two
Village.
Others, and there's a third we haven't even heard about yet. Three new restaurants coming to Westville Village. Everyone's exciting about.
And
then this one, yes. But right in
Westville Village and then right there in Westville.
But in fact, in an area, the other ones are in fact right where people live.
Yeah.
And then the other one is a little set back there, but right across the little river from where one of the big neighborhood activists and people who made the neighborhood happen lives. And but this site has had a history because a lot of Southern students go. We used to go there illegally, and some shady people ran it. And there was a murder, and they broke all the rules. Yeah. There was a murder. There was breaking all the rules.
There was a murder?
Yeah, there was a murder. And there was also just like they lied about permission to build stuff and how they got stuff. So it's not the fault of the person who came in. So the woman's coming in and had this extra racial element was that she's black. Okay. And it's not true that all the people who are active in the Westfield group are white, but most are. So white math would say it's an integrated group. scientific math would say it's a white neighborhood with some people who aren't white who also get involved, right? Mm-hmm. And so they came out against it because they were worried about the history of that spot and this now coming again, having a 1 a.m. opening. The woman who wanted to open it says, well, you know, you had these other restaurants 1 a.m, you're pretty cool with that. And you have a whole history with other problems. And now what you're speaking out against me, but not the others, this feels racial to me. And it got tense and there was a fight in the hallway between the woman who's black who was through it and the woman who's white, who's the neighborhood activist who lives right across and said, I just could never sleep before. And she accused her of racism and chewed her out in front of her kid. And then she said, you are not well, because she won permission to open the spot. She said, you are not welcome to come to my spot again.
I find this whole thing funny because, you know, there's churches that meet in that building. There's 2 churches. And they're loud as anybody because I don't work there. Because when they come in, I go out because they are unbelievably loud. I'm talking about churches with drums, the whole electronic setup.
Wow.
So, they rival any nightclub.
You got a slumlord business in there, too.
I was about to say, but...
Oh, are they?
And plus the building...
But the church probably isn't operating at 1 a.m, are they? Or 2 in the morning.
And the building's also falling apart, but that's another question. There's a whole. Environmental problems. Yeah. So what do you think? What did you think, Marquisa? Because you covered one of the hearings where they got some shade. What do you think?
I feel like I just got put on the spot. I personally don't think she should be penalized for what has happened, what other owners have done in terms of not keeping... If she can get the approvals, and she did... Like, you have to let her, like, because some people are like, oh, she doesn't have experience running a restaurant. Well,
the people who were there,
you can't control that. Like,
yeah,
you can't control. And would you feel better if it were like, so the people who are opening a restaurant at the former First Niagara Bank, well, they have tons of experience. And some people are like, oh, it's, you know, it's just a chef. And, you know, I'm excited about that. And I get that because they have a track record. Right, they have two other restaurants.
Arturo Camacho. And
before that, they have two other restaurants in town. But they didn't pick that site. They picked the other site because they want to own it, basically. So, but like, she wants to put something in a vacant place that isn't there. She's come to the community, which they always, you know, like, if you don't come to the community, you're not getting no play at BZA. Mm. But... They came to the community, they presented their plans, they heard people's concerns, and they kept coming to try to address people's concerns and say, you know, talk to us about it. You have Alder Furlow, who's like, I'm gonna be the first person out there if there's a problem. And he has been the person out there when there have been problems with other owners. So I'm willing to give them a shot.
And there are people, including white people in that neighborhood, saying, thank you for investing. We're going to come to your restaurant.
Yeah, they have the backing of...
Do you think it's fair to say that it's tough to talk about race?
Oh, absolutely.
So like in this case...
Because I don't want to jump to any conclusions about anybody. Some of those comments do look racially motivated.
Do you think it's fair to say that there are definitely issues here that have nothing to do with race concerns? And
absolutely.
And to think this has nothing to do with race is kind of bizarre when everyone speaking for it was white, was black. And there was a class Emma, too, come from neighborhoods like West Hills. And that everyone against it was middle class and white from Westville. And that doesn't mean they're wrong or right on either side. But to think that there's not a racial element would be sort of to deny that race plays a role in our perceptions in America.
I think it'd be race and maybe class as well, because that part of the neighborhood isn't as prosperous as the side of the neighborhood that we live on.
And right, and the very people who did fight this restaurant also fought predominantly white bars that were open until 1 a.m, right in Westville Village, where people were shootings.
And you understand that. Who wants to live
and
down the street from a rowdy bar?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think anybody, regardless of their race, could feel that way.
Yeah, and Owl's Nest was a problem bar they shut down. So I guess my take on it would be, is that it's head in the sand to say this has nothing to do with race. but that it also has to do with other things besides race, and that I think everyone agrees in the end that you have to follow the rules, and this woman followed the rules, and she has a right to open a restaurant. We hope it succeeds.
And she passes or fails on her own merits.
And she kind of lost it out in the hallway, and I don't think it's very good business to tell a prominent person who's concerned about what you're doing and a neighbor say, never step foot in my restaurant.
Her best, I don't want to say revenge, that's not the right word, but the best thing that Joy could do is tell her, I'll prove you wrong.
Yeah.
My business will be different.
Yeah. And come and have a drink.
And come. Exactly. And I want you to come. Come for dinner on me.
Now we're really in front on me.
That on me part got to slow down.
Well, okay. After she makes like her first, I don't know what margins are in the restaurant business.
Not very
after
high.
After she turns a profit, say dinner's on me.
Hey, do you think that the protesters at Yale are turning a metaphorical profit? They've been getting a lot of, so the Yale graduate student teachers have been wanting to have a union. They won an election for like 9% of the graduate students or whatever. So they get to be part of a union now, but Yale won't negotiate a first contract with them. They're fighting the election at the National Labor Relations Board. So they've been in this protest for a couple weeks now. People fasting. Some of the original festers are still there after 2 weeks. Markeisha wrote about how some have swapped out. But even though, and tell me if you have the same perception, folks, I feel like the average New Havener, pro or anti-union, is not very sympathetic to the plight of these graduate students. But these graduate students have been so good at creatively pressing their issue, tying it legitimately to questions about Donald Trump and whom he'll appoint to the NLRB, and creatively like getting the shack up, the shed they put up when the police weren't union looking, when they kind of distracted them, and have this facts on the ground protest area. It's become a celebration. They're getting national media, the National Union Unite Here, that is the parent union of the union at Yale. They've been using this example to talk about Yale, this enlightened liberal institution, is trying to play a waiting game so that Donald Trump can appoint people they like to the NLRB and overturn the right to organize. Did you feel this week like there might have been a turning point with they blocked traffic yesterday and got arrested? They had the 2 week anniversary where you had the mayor and the head of the board of alders and the U.S. congresswoman wheeling the three original fasters in a wheelchair before the cameras in front of hundreds of people to a rally. I thought that was kind of powerful optics and maybe outmaneuvering Yale. But what did you think, Markeisha, or others who were watching this?
Joe? Well, what I think about it is I saw the protesters in the middle of the street, and one of the things they were highlighting was sexual harassment on campus. And I really couldn't connect what was the real protest. Was it because you weren't getting a union, or was it because of sexual
harassment?
They're
arguing, because what people don't understand, it's not actually a fight for wages. Ever since they've been spending 25 years trying to get a union, they've actually got the wages up, Yale, to fight it. So we can't figure out the economics here. They're saying, we want to have a union to press issues like sexual harassment. We don't have a process to complain well. Yale says, we get it from the right nationally because we get criticized for taking it too seriously and not looking out enough for the rights of the accused when we've brought up sexual harassment and assault cases. So they're saying they blocked traffic yesterday and got arrested, saying this is a fight partly about having a union that can stand up for us on sexual harassment. Now, yesterday, you know, you guys watched them block traffic three different intersections. On the ground in New Haven, I'm not sure whether this matters to the outcome of this fight. I hear a lot of resentment from people in New Haven about traffic being blocked, saying, you know, we might agree with your cause, but why are you blocking traffic? Why are you inconveniencing our lives? What do you guys think about that?
Protest isn't convenient.
It's not convenient. I mean, it's supposed to be inconveniencing people. That's the whole point.
So okay, can I be a little selfish here for 5 seconds?
Yep.
Okay. Here I am. Okay.
So you can't get home, you know, in 20 minutes. It'll take you a little longer.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell. However you choose to protest, I still stand with that. And by the way, someone approached me. I had an event last Saturday at my building. Someone approached me from the union and said, thanks for standing up for their way to protest, and you know, on Pundit last week, Pundit's Friday, I believe it was, where I stood up and said, hey, you have the right to protest. And they thanked me for it. And they said, and I asked them, because I also talk about this on my show. And I said, well, which show did you hear it on? And they said they heard it on Pundit Friday. I said, oh, you need to listen to the morning show as well. He goes, oh, early in the morning.
Plugging his show.
Oh, no, I can't get up early.
Was it me?
All I could say is, I'm over here fighting for your right to protest, but you can't listen to my show. Selfish moment. Selfish moment.
Oh my God.
I didn't see that coming. When I gave you permission to be selfish, I didn't see that coming. I thought you were going to be like, well, I would like the traffic not to be blocked.
I don't know, Joe. Is your show serious sometimes because all I hear is jokes.
Was Richard Pryor serious? Stephen Colbert serious?
Okay, I gotta go now.
No, to anyone who can't realize
there's not
there
enough
is so
room
much
for
truth.
The two bald guys. Go ahead.
if anyone can't realize, yes, serious and truth and comedy more so than anywhere else. Well, I got glasses for that.
So like you're a comedian.
I'd like to comment on Joe Ugly's show. I have an opportunity. I've had opportunities to listen to his show on my way in or to different places, and I love to listen to it early in the morning because it makes me laugh.
Thank you.
And when you laugh, certain adrenalines come out, and the rest of your day is good.
Well, thank you very much.
You bringing some sunshine.
I was joking. I love listening to Joe. I listen to Joe every morning, too.
Harry needs to go on Joe's show.
They talk about serious things, but they laugh about it.
Is there a show in New Haven anywhere, or in Connecticut? Anywhere else where you can find unsigned hip-hop artists and listen to them, and it's good stuff, except on the Joe Show, Joe Ugly Show, in the morning show in WNHH.
Thank you, sir.
On Ugly Radio.
As we continue on Fun Up Friday.
Well, I don't want to keep giving accolades to Joe. but you did have a good artist today with that song you played.
Oh, did you like that?
That was pretty sick.
Oh man, thank you very much. That's my artist, by the way.
Now, how sick are the protesters getting, Markeisha? There's a couple people there have been drinking only water for 3 weeks, two weeks now, Charles.
This
Decker.
Sounds like a weight loss plan that I need to my...
Well,
it's a protest weight loss plan.
But, you know, I wonder whether it's going to permanently affect their health.
I don't care about that.
You're playing.
You're like, there's time. See, the body's very resilient, I think. And I think they'll, like, because of the way they're doing it, instead of just going until, like, somebody dies or something.
Sort of like, you know, it's not like they're in those five countries in Africa that are...
In famine.
In famine.
Right.
It's not that.
This is by choice.
Yeah.
You know, I think the optics of it, you know, the mayor and all, I loved it. I love
what?
No, I love a good I love a good soap opera. So
Oh God,
I like the drama of it.
No, I love it.
I love the drama.
I don't know if it's gonna move or win any hearts. Like yesterday, you know, we had people coming here, guests and everything, and they were complaining about the protests and the traffic. Mm-hmm. So
I was listening to one pro-union, lifelong Dwight neighborhood African-American activist. She was going off about them blocking the streets.
But
saying,
again,
she says, like, what are they trying to think? You think we black people are going to feel sorry for them because of this? And I was shocked. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
But I don't know. But what about the soap opera with Graduation coming? Oh. Will Yale leave that shed up? So they have their shed built.
I'm looking for a big dramatic action around the commencement. I'm a reporter. I'm like Paul, like this type of stuff. I'm pumped. I'm like, I don't know what they're going to do. They didn't tip me, so I don't know.
Well, yesterday people there were telling me they think, we'll not allow it to stand on graduation day when all the big crowds
come. Think about it, if
they'll take out in the middle of the night.
Big, nasty thing if they try to do it in the middle of the night. These guys are ready. So if Yale's got something coming, they got something. Like they're going to make it dramatic.
I hope they leave it up. Because you know why? Because soon as graduation is over, it's over.
It's over.
Everybody goes and leave. Just, I wouldn't even mess with it.
Well, I think we all feel, we said that, we all feel like Yale's university, not just some kind of cold, faceless corporation, which actually has not become true in practice, but we believe it's supposed to be. And, you know, they don't exist just to have very, very wealthy people like Steve Schwarzman give $150 million and then make sure there's nothing that makes them look bad on the campus. They're supposed to be free thought and dialogue. I mean, the president of Yale is this great guy. He's emotional intelligence. He hasn't gone out once to just chat with them. He's written emails that lawyers check first to say what they stand for. I mean, that's not a university, that's a corporation.
Yeah,
we all believe. I think,
but in today's
world,
I hate to interrupt, Paul.
You worry about lawsuits.
In today's world,
but then don't be university. Say we are now called Rich People's Donation Inc. to support corporate advancement through bought out academic research. If you want to say that's what you are, call yourself that. If you want to try to still be a university, there are ways around it. You could check with lawyers, but also be a university and be human and go out and talk to people and debate. But in any case, I think we all think, and tell me if I'm wrong, that even Harry Jones would argue it's crazy to knock it down. You look stupid and illiberal. Just leave it there. It doesn't hurt you. It just hurts you if you overreact.
Yeah. Correct.
But I have this feeling in practice that that's not the way they
that
look at it.
That they're going to overreact?
Yeah, take it down.
I hope they don't.
You know what I really think they should do? Add in a special edition to graduation and include them.
Of course.
Take everybody
this
on a tour.
This is how much we we approve freedom of speech.
Mm. Yes.
Make it part of the whole university.
That's how we live pie in the sky. We still believe that's what universities are. Right. We've seen it change.
Like, show some pride about it.
Actually, with labor, universities have always, Ivy League universities have always been completely hypocritical and corporate when it comes to unions. Because the same thing happened in 1983 when Local 34 formed. It was office workers, secretaries, administrative aides, researchers. And they said at the time, well, that's not workers like a factory. And they had this anti-union law firm like they did today. And then when they won the election, they still wouldn't negotiate a contract. They said, we're going to make you strike for it and see if you can get those physical plant blue-collar people to come strike with you. So they did. So they had the first contract. So this is about power. I thought it was about money. And some people said to me, well, how could it be about money? Yale raised the wages. They're spending all this money on corporate law firm trying to fight it instead of just negotiating when they don't even need much more money, these graduate workers. But I think it still might be about money, because I think Yale thinks in centuries. It doesn't think in years or decades. And I think they're thinking that if you have three major unions instead of two, they can more effectively shut down our university and drive up the cost of labor. But other people say no, they think it's ideological, that they just don't, they want to have the power in the classroom. They don't want graduate student teachers to be seen as workers as opposed to apprentices and students who get to have as much say as the professors. So I'm guessing economics, because I think even universities come down to money now, but people who are smarter than I am believe that it's actually ideology. So what do you think? Is it money or ideology?
I mean, I think it's both. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can't have one without the other in this particular setting. Mm-hmm. You know, the university has to sort of be thinking forward about its own viability moving forward. But at the same time, they got to know that, you know, they are a university where they are supposed to cultivate free thinking.
You know, Nat, but you know, with this $26 billion endowment now, and they have this whole built up department. It's great they have a big endowment, by the way. That's a good thing, because it safeguards education for decades. I don't understand why people are down on them for having a big endowment. That's great.
Right.
But it's become this money factory with this huge department that drives everything else the university does, and does quash dissent. It always tries to massage the message and does try to keep out free speech. And I think that that's sort of the root of the problem.
Well, I think that is a culture, a leadership cultural thing. I think if they, and I don't know this president. I mean, I think he's
actually the corporation behind him.
Who's leading the corporation? Because I think if you have a different leadership at the corporation level, then it will be a different kind of experience top down.
I don't know, Babs, because free speech today on college campuses across the country is really being, it's being challenged in so many different ways. Because, for example,
you let that crazy education secretary come to the historically black college and talk that talk.
And then, of course, there are people who are saying, people are saying that, you know, she did was wrong, and she was...
She was invited.
She wasn't invited by the students.
So let me ask you.
But they didn't shot Elizabeth DeVos down. They just turned her back on her.
Right?
And they've been playing games with black colleges from day one. They bring them to the White House for photo op, and then they're going to take all their money away.
They were exercising their free speech.
Well, they shouted her down, and the college president went up there, and he said... Well, we could mail your diploma.
They got to mail them anyway.
No, but they were saying not have the ceremony. Or we could just shut this down.
And then what was he doing? What exactly was he doing?
What was who doing?
Within that sentence, what was he doing?
He was
taking away their right
to
protest this woman by threatening their degree. You have the right to protest.
They were protesting quietly.
They just got up and turned their back on her.
But you're shutting down speech also on the other end.
But he wanted to take away their right. Have the right.
He was stopping them from shutting her down, which is normal on the college campuses these days. You're saying that they're challenging freedom of speech?
No, I agree with
Berkeley,
you.
Like Berkeley, they're challenging freedom of speech?
I knew you were going to go there. And you're absolutely right. What happened over there at Berkeley? Was it Berkeley or Stanford?
Berkeley.
Okay, what happened over there was just ridiculous.
That wasn't students. That was outside groups.
Right, exactly.
But even in Berkeley, the cradle of free speech, there is no freer speech than on Pundit Friday, WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live stream, newhavenpen.org. Hey, Nora Rodriguez Reyes, did you follow what was going on with that rookie cop this week? There was a police officer who was in the police academy, and he failed 5 tests. And you're allowed to fail, and Babs remembers this as a police commissioner, you're allowed to fail 5 tests if you make it up. But under the manual of the police department, if you fail a 6th test, you're gone. So the police chief and the assistant chief brought him to the police commissioners and said,
we have to get rid of this guy. He failed the sixth test. The guy brought all his supporters.
Six tests in a row?
No.
Oh, okay.
Then just the guy said, yeah, you can't fail more than five, even if you make them up. This guy said, but the sixth test was just I knocked a cone over when I was driving. And all the supporters said, he's a good guy, he's a good cop. It's hard to recruit cops. This guy was African-American. It's hard to recruit African-American cops.
Right?
He's from New Haven. So other people said, but then other people said, well, yeah, the sixth one was cones, but the other five weren't. And the assistant chief said, if we don't have any standards, what's the point? And other people said, but the commissioners overruled the chief. And say, we think this is a bad rule, and he should be able to get on.
I was surprised by that, because we've talked about here before that we didn't see the commission as being, like the commission seems here as of late, at least the 3 years that I've been here, they kind of, whatever the chief recommends, they kind of, I don't want to say they rubber stamp it. But
well, say, please.
But they.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a good point, Markeisha.
I don't know about rubber stamp, but they seem to go along with
it. Well, the chief's heart did not seem to be in
fire.
Well, he said, I have no choice.
Oh.
The interim chief. The assistant chief said, we got to have standards. If we have no standards, what's the point?
So he's saying, this is the rule.
Yeah, and he said, maybe change the rule. And so they overruled him. Were you surprised at all, Norma? What was your take on that?
I don't even want to comment on this because it really infuriates me when they're willing to do it for someone and not for everybody else.
And I think that's the challenge. Like, if there's a precedent before where they have fired people or not let them finish or graduate, then if you're upsetting that precedent, you know, are you going to get lost?
So, Norma, what cases are you thinking of?
There's been a lot of cases in which they put hurdles for individuals.
What would be an example?
For example, for the longest times, supposedly Latinos didn't pass the test, the written test. Mm. Finally, you have them passing the test, and all of a sudden, they don't pass the psychological test.
Right.
Then they pass the psychological test, and all of a sudden, they don't pass the background check for menial things.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
For me,
jaywalking on Wednesday.
Wednesday's a bad day for jaywalking.
You know, and I was told that, you know what? The people who do the background investigation, they let certain things go on people and not on others. So,
it's
amazing. If you're not connected or whatever, it just doesn't happen. To me, I really think we have a lot of great Latinos and African Americans here in New Haven.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
You know what? Some of them, if they grew up in the inner city, if they had a tough life growing up, I think certain things need to be forgiven.
Like hitting
that
cone.
Like we had that case that Shirlene Poindexter's niece. She didn't get allowed on the force because she was living with a drug dealer while the police were investigating him for doing major crimes while he was using her car. And she was letting that happen. And then people felt that
was she all, aware?
People felt that, like Norma, they felt she should have been given a break. What did you think, Markeisha?
Oh, gosh. That's like 1,000 years ago.
Well, what about you, Babs? You were a police commissioner.
I think they did the right thing. Yeah, you can't do that.
No, that's in a just, case like that, I understand.
A case that's like that, you can't do that.
What about this one, Babs? What you have done if you were on the police commission? This guy hit the cone.
I think Markeisha calls it right. Like, what is the precedent for this? And who have they not let through with their class doing the same thing? Now, he had six. You have the right to take a test over. And so I guess he did and passed them. And then when he got to the sixth one, I guess there's no takeover to do with this cone thing. So, or, you know, the driving thing. So.
Yeah, and I don't have enough information about what the first five tests were. Like,
but
he
got, I understood that he got to take the test.
I don't know if I'm understanding from the story that, like, I think what maybe it was Chief Campbell who said, like, the tests, they're not weighted differently against each other. They take a bunch of tests, but they're not weighted. Like, one's not like the big final exam or something like that. There is a series of tests that they take along the way that they have to pass. So one of the commissioners raised, I think, a very good question, which was, so if they're all essentially weighted the same and you're allowed to take them those five over, then it's like you did, is it still like you failed if you passed when you took the other five tests over? They need to confirm their own process and decide what it's going to be.
You know, my thing is, some rules are stupid.
It's
simple like that. Some rules are stupid, and Norma, I understand that they've done it to this person and that person, but I think they have to start somewhere to eliminate stupid rules, and hopefully this is the start of it.
Yeah. So they've
given the biggest danger to cops' lives is driving problems. I do kind of care how they drive. And what happened the first five tests? Was it search
maybe he doesn't need to drive. Maybe he just stays on foot detail and bike detail.
He will never be a walking bee officer.
You never get a
We do need walking bee officers.
We do need walking bee officers. I feel like there are lots of officers but no these more days. Does anybody feel that way? And graduation is today.
Tonight, yeah.
So tonight. And
he's feeling it.
Norma raised a good point when you said that, you know, they had the background test, the way you have the psychological. I recall someone told me, I don't know how in detail it is, but on the test it was asked, have you ever used marijuana? Mm-hmm. And the person said, hey, you know, what do I put? You know,
I think it has to be in the last 2 years. And Tony Hark wants to change this, the mayor. Yeah. I think it's the last 2 years. You're not supposed to have done the last 2 years.
In the last 2 years, but it wasn't like that before. Have you ever done marijuana? And, of course, you know, the answer is yes. And you know other people that are on the force who you know smoke weed. So it's like, okay.
And maybe. To Norma's other point, I remember you saying, Paul, that. You know, one of the things that might be at play is that you said that when there have been African-American officers reviewing other potential African-American candidates, they're tougher because they expect excellence. They're like, I don't want you to come into the department and make us look bad.
Especially the one guy who admitted putting his member into a bowl of peanut butter.
And I don't know if that's at play with the Latino officers who might be participating in background interviews, but, you know, in certain ways, they might be hurting their own.
Really? You know, some, like you said, Harry, some rules are just silly. You just got to get to the point of, you know, if you're going to, anyone who think that, okay, I've got to, we have to get past that.
But we do need standards, don't we?
I don't understand that.
Do you want cops going around who aren't going to be, this guy is obviously supposed to be a good guy, and I feel terrible he was so humiliated. But in general, we do want to have some, like, why don't you ask about police, too, like, if they're tough enough or not. Right now, we have an Orthodox Jewish school in New Haven where all the kids were taken out. Because the rabbi was accused by a couple of people of having, for many years, raped everybody, okay? Or raped a bunch of them. And raped a bunch of people. So he denies it. But everyone pulled their kids out. But now he found other kids to come to this school. There was some evidence that I believe this could be true, right? So now there's a trial going on this week that Christopher Peake's been covering in The Independent. And this school is still functioning. And the New Haven police decided not, they said statute of limitations ran out on some of these allegations, and they decided not to investigate this. My question is, so are you going to just allow, you can't, the guy hasn't been convicted of a crime. He has rights. But do you just like leave it alone? What do you do if you're the police department or your community and you have the school still going on?
I know, that's a new, that's scary.
You have to wait until somebody makes another complaint, right?
And that's bad. Now we're reacting.
But someone else did come forward in a deposition who had a whole other series of allegations.
But not among the current students at that school, right?
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I need a new mic.
I mean, this was the assistant. Okay.
We hear you.
I bet you don't.
I do. We hear you.
You guys can hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Because I can't hear myself, and that's dropping.
You're the loudest person in my head right now.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's a little scary, too.
Can I tell you?
On Pundit Friday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live stream, newhavenindependent.org, or we're doing Pundit Friday.
So you guys got together and said, you're going to tell me you heard me, right?
Sorry, we're not
it's
that
a
petty.
Trick, right?
We're not petty.
We're
like
not that,
that
petty.
I am.
No, you are.
Look, guys, we know we may or may not live in Siren City. We know we live in Protest City. Do we live in general in a tin pot dictatorship or a democracy? Because this week that question came to the floor. We have a president of the United States who, by his own admission yesterday, on national TV, said that while he was thinking about this investigation of him and his administration for its ties with Russia, fired. For the first time in history, a president doing this with the FBI, he fired the head of the FBI this week. You got Republicans running for cover now, saying this is trouble. You got people left in the world, right here
in Little City.
But in New Haven, we have somebody who still is proudly defending the man.
Somebody in the same room, never mind.
Harry Jost. Now, Harry Jost, you were defending him the other day. In the last day, the new head of the FBI just went before the Senate and said that your man Trump is actually lying off his butt. They said, A...
He said the butt part.
Yeah. No. the acting head of the FBI said, this is unprecedented, at a Senate hearing, he said it's not true that the rank and file was upset with James Comey, the fire director. It's not true even that Trump was told he's not the subject of an investigation. He tore everything apart. The president just said his version of events. Harry, I know you're a diehard to the end. Did this cause any slightest doubt in your mind that your president might be some kind of wacko, nutty, dangerous authoritarian who's just destroying freedom in our country and the Constitution?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow, that's a lot. Actually, Wacky and nutty, I'll agree with you. Now, not true and what you're saying about the acting FBI director. He also said that Comey didn't ask for more money. He also said...
The allegation wasn't money.
Yes. Around the news, it was widely spread around that he wanted more resources and the acting FBI
resources,
director...
Resources, not money.
Same thing. He said... resources. Either way, the acting FBI director said we have enough resources. He did not ask for anything. Now, you know, and I
but
have...
But he also said...
I think we give the medal to Harry. He found something. He found one fact among all this
it's
to hang Donald
fact.
Trump
no,
with.
No, it's not a fact.
He's like, I got receipts.
But what about the big picture, Harry? Have you had a moment at all this week when you thought maybe what Donald Trump did wasn't
Joe
good?
Have
and did you have a moment
you
thinking,
the hill?
Joe, breathe.
No. Just Harry. Wait. Come on, give the man.
Probably under that.
Give the man his chance. Give the man his chance. Harry Jones was the last defender of Donald Trump. Do you think there was a moment, were you just for a second when we weren't paying any attention, we weren't listening to you, was there a moment you said, maybe my guy didn't do so great here?
No. Well, what I thought was he should shut up. Like I always think, he should just shut
Lord
up.
Praise the Lord and pass the pee.
But let me make this clear, because I know we go around in circles here, but if Trump actually did something, collusion, whatever, I'm with you guys. He should be over.
Okay,
you know,
so,
I follow no man, and I'm not. I don't look up to any man. So now, my country, I love my country.
Oh,
and if this guy did something against the country, I'm right there with you.
So let me ask you a question: when this guy,
all this conjecture and all, you guys are
so you don't
all
even,
over the place.
So you don't even go have any suspicion when this guy on one out on the campaign trail. Screaming,
and Joe was complaining we don't let him talk.
I'm talking
this
about
morning.
This guy,
Trump, popcorn
was
and
over
martinis.
Here screaming that
this would be so much fun with alcohol.
Hillary Clinton. that James Comey did the right thing by exposing Hillary Clinton. Blew kisses across the room to him. Oh, he cheered him on for doing it, and then now turn around and say,
"Well, let me tell
you,
that is
the reason." And then last night, hold on. Last night on a national television and said, no, that's not the reason why. It wasn't because of what he did with Hillary Clinton. This is after he left his press secretary, his vice president, both press secretary and deputy press secretary, Susan Huckabee Sanders.
Sanders.
So he left
she's
them,
mean.
He left them all out there and said, oh, no, that's not why.
Oh, she's a mean one.
I did it because... I fired him because this is what I was going to do. Regardless,
look, he had planned to fire, and in that interview, he said it was all about timing. He planned to fire.
He
planned
said
to fire
there was
Comey.
No right time.
No, right. He said there was about timing.
No, he said there was no right time.
But listen,
he said,
but now once you once you get
court,
a recommendation by
no
your
right
deputy director,
yes.
It's the right time.
No, but he did not.
But I'm telling you, it made it easier for him to get rid of him.
He was going to.
He was
going to
do it anyway, but it was about timing.
But you see, that's the joke.
I just
want
to see if Harry thinks in the end it was good timing.
Was it good timing? I thought he should have been fired a long time ago.
But okay, I didn't think the deputy director even copped to saying to Trump.
Do you really
think
what he did with James Comey was correct?
I don't think he even copped to that.
So can I ask you guys what I thought about the timing that I felt no one was talking about? So since Tuesday, all we've been hearing about. This is very exciting news about Comey, right? This is what Trump did. That same day, his attorney general, Jeff Sessions,
yes!
Darth Vader, that same day.
Don't even credit him with Darth Vader.
He announced that the Justice Department will no longer try to keep nonviolent drug offenders out of jail.
Out of jail. Yep.
He announced that he's going to go about trying to stuff our jails again with what will probably
sure
be
did you see the
African American people.
For-profit jails are coming back up.
So no one's talking about that while they're talking about this drama about The Apprentice and you're fired.
Paul. Yes, we are talking about that. Show ugly in the morning, 6 a.m. to 9.
What do you think, guys?
Joe's
like Babs, like Markeisha this week was writing about James Forman Jr., the Yale law professor, who's writing about the prison industrial complex, the danger this is posing to our cities and our community. But there's this whole Republican and Democratic consensus in the country, at state houses and cities across the country, that we have too many nonviolent people in jail. It's not helping them. It's not making us safer. It's costing us tons of money.
Right.
It's not rehabilitating anybody. It's not
dealing
with the sorts of problems.
Texas. I mean, Texas decided this already. Yep. They decided this years ago that housing people like this was too much for their fiscal budget.
Now, luckily, I think most people drug charges are on state, not federal, if I'm not mistaken. So Sessions can't destroy this the way he's destroying consent decrees to try to make people safer.
I hope he gets to go to jail. I hope he does.
I'm scared to death of this guy.
But the one, you know, I am fearful of Jeff Sessions being the attorney general, but I'm keeping hope alive because, after all, he is tied in to this whole Trump-Russian connection.
That's the problem for me. While I hate Jeff Sessions more than anyone in America, I think he's the Ku Klux Klan, he's doing with immigration, with the consent decrees. He's even willing to override his concern for local police chiefs and overrule them on consent decrees to protect African-Americans on immigration. Correct. But I am not upset with him about Russia. I think the left has completely blown that out of proportion.
What do you mean?
He shouldn't have misspoken at his hearings, but I think senators on the Foreign Relations Committee are supposed to speak to people from Russia. I think that I don't think he was part of anything.
Not in that capacity.
He wasn't in the capacity at the time.
He was part of the campaign.
There was no evidence he was speaking to them about the campaign.
There's no evidence that he wasn't.
I'm not saying, Babs, that you shouldn't look into the question.
But there was no evidence that he wasn't either.
Right, so that's why he shouldn't have misspoken at the hearing. But of all the horrible things, about Jeff Sessions,
yes,
acting like a responsible senator to talk about foreign affairs with the Russians doesn't seem to me like
you just made Harry so happy right now.
He was not talking about foreign affairs. I'm not going with that duality.
No, wait. Let's just go back to the original thing.
I'm not going back to that.
Now, Sessions, I don't think he should have been attorney general either because he has too much of a history.
Say Rudy Giuliani.
With race.
I'm coming across this room.
No. I love Giuliani, by the way. I was in New York during Giuliani. I saw what Giuliani did for New York. I worked for Giuliani when I was a grad student,
getting my master's.
I thought you was going to say when you were in prison. What did you do for Giuliani?
They had a medical assistance program, and so I was charged with inventorying those programs in the five boroughs and figuring out why they had this process of trying to turn people away from medical assistance programs. So they had this system in place that a real system in place that if you showed up for medical assistance in anywhere in these boroughs, that they would make you wait so that you would turn around and leave, that you wouldn't seek assistance. So they had all these barriers to keep people from applying for medical assistance programming.
Norma, did you ever find a word here you wanted to say?
No.
Okay, well, I think we have hit on a button with Giuliani. We got to remember next week. That as soon as we got Harry and Babs and Joe in the studio, we have to mention that name, Giuliani.
Say it.
So I'm going to leave you. We're going to leave that with you this week as we say thank you for listening to Pundit Fridays with the best pundits in the world. And you saw why today. Norma Rodriguez Reyes, Babs Rawls, Ivy, Marquisa Ricks, Joe Ugly, the many names, and Harry Joe's the bravest man in New Haven.
Yes, he is.
So we are not done talking about Giuliani. We're just done for today. And we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now, at least for the next 5 minutes in America until Jeff Sessions gets to his next goal, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book it and fly free with us all weekend long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.